From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, June 28, 2017. And on this day, new owners for Saddleback Mountain and Rangeley, and more complications with ranked choice voting in Maine as supporters say they could launch a people's veto effort to keep it alive. Those stories ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Master of Public Health Program, preparing students for today's complex population health and health services needs.
Supporters of Maine's ranked choice voting law say they could launch a people's veto effort to keep the initiative alive. Voters approved the law last November in a referendum, but the law ran into some constitutional problems and the legislature may repeal it. As Steve Missler reports, the threat of a people's veto adds another layer of complexity to an already complex situation.
The ranked choice voting law ran into a legal problem. After it was approved, the Maine Supreme Judicial Court issued an opinion finding that the law was unconstitutional for use in general elections for governor or the legislature. Kyle Bailey, with the Committee for Ranked Choice Voting, says his group would accept a bill that implements the system for elections other than those, but
if they choose not to do so, certainly supporters of ranked choice voting have the option to do a people's veto, to repeal the legislature's repeal, and to restore the ranked choice voting law as enacted by voters.
If the group decides to launch a people's veto effort, it will have to gather more than 61,000 signatures. That could mean that the state will have to implement the new system for at least one election, the 2018 June primaries. And voters could be deciding at the very same time whether they want to keep ranked choice.
If it went on to the June ballot, we would have to implement ranked choice voting as if nothing else had changed. So it would be in a pretty strange climate of uncertainty.
Secretary of State Matt Dunlap says that will all depend on when and if ranked choice voting supporters submit their people's veto signatures. By law, any people's veto effort has 90 days from adjournment of the legislature to collect the necessary signatures. If the signatures are collected quickly, then it's possible the people's veto would appear on the November ballot. But if the signature drive drifts past August 26, it could get kicked to the June primary because state election officials have to close the November ballot 60 days before the election. And because a people's veto automatically halts the law it seeks to repeal once the signatures are verified, state election officials would have to implement ranked choice voting. Dunlap says that potential outcome has caused heartburn for lawmakers who are already opposed to a partial implementation of the system. But from the perspective of ranked choice voting supporters, a people's veto may be the only way to save the system from being repealed altogether. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
The Saddleback ski area is changing hands, and the new owners say they have the resources to turn the struggling mountain into a four-season recreational magnet. Fred Bever has more.
Saddleback's been closed for two seasons now, 2 years of hardship for the skiers, condo owners, residents, and Rangeley area businesses that depend on it. So this came as a relief.
Well, we are announcing today that Magella and the Berries have agreed and executed a full purchase, sale, and operating agreement for the mountain in its entirety.
That's Sebastian Mansour, CEO of the Magella Group, speaking to more than 100 interested onlookers at Saddleback's Rustic Lodge. Magella is a family-owned multinational company based in Brisbane, Australia. The company recently established U.S. headquarters in Portland, and Mansour quickly demonstrated his ability to pick up the local vernacular.
As you can see, I am truly from away. Yeah. There are a few places that are further from here than Australia.
Mansour says Magella hasn't run a ski resort before, but he's hiring a team of locals to bring the mountain back into service as a four-season resort. He declined to release financial details of the deal. Irene and Bill Berry, the previous owners who struggled to find the resources to install a new lift and other vital facilities, had considered a $6 million deal to sell the core of the area to a nonprofit foundation that included local skiers.
Basically, they would have been doing it on a shoestring.
Bill Berry says while the nonprofit tried to raise capital, Magella was doing due diligence. And he's confident Magella can make the investments needed to secure the resort's future and help bring back the hundreds of jobs that the mountain once sustained.
For the past 2 years, we've been trying to turn the mountain over to somebody who would carry it to another level. And our major concern over that two-year period has been basically for the people who worked here.
Magella is already working with Doppelmayr, a leading ski lift manufacturer, on a fast new lift to replace the resort's outdated central people mover, known as the Rangeley Lift. That was taken as a positive sign by many of the event's attendees. Mary Ellen Maroney, who lives here in Sandy River Plantation, says after years of rumors, locals are starting to believe that the resort's revival might actually happen.
Although some people say they're going to have their body on the lift before they really believe it.
Magella is being careful to keep expectations in check. Fred LaMontagne, the former Portland fire chief who will be the resort's new CEO, says it's much too early to say whether the mountain can be brought into shape in time for the coming ski season. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
And finally today, earlier this month, Republican Governor Paul LePage took up a Democrat-sponsored food sovereignty bill and signed it. The move, which delighted or dismayed, depending on who you talk to, essentially tells state regulators to butt out if a municipality chooses to assert its local authority over food regulation. The law is similar in spirit to some passed recently in Wyoming and North Dakota, but it's being hailed as the first of its kind in the nation, with almost 10 years in the making. Jennifer Mitchell has more.
The term food sovereignty may be relatively new, but the actual practice dates back centuries. Until about the 20th century, neighbors could buy and sell everything from apples to hoghead cheese right off the farm.
So food sovereignty is really about people making the decision about our food and not corporate entities, not agencies.
That's Heather Rettberg, who, along with her husband Phil, has a small farm in Penobscot near Blue Hill. For nearly a dozen years, they sold milk straight from their hand-milked cows and goats and meat to local customers who came to their farm store. But all that came to an end one day in 2009. The couple had just spent the day slaughtering chickens at a friend's processing shed when a state inspector paid them a visit.
And the inspector let us know that we were not allowed to do that because our friend under USDA rules wasn't allowed to share his facility at all, and we would have to build our own facility. And while he was here, he noticed that we were selling fresh milk, and then he called back a few weeks later and said, by the way, I should let you know the department is also reviewing our milk policy, and we've reclassified you.
Rettberg says with the stroke of a pen, she and her husband were no longer farmers but distributors, facing thousands of dollars in compliance upgrades. According to a spokesman for the Maine Department of Agriculture, the Rettbergs and others like them were not actually reclassified, but when the oversight of milk sales was shifted from the Division of Animal Health to the Ag Department, the department actually started enforcing the law that had been inserted into statute about 10 years earlier. Either way, it meant that the couple couldn't sell their milk in the way that they had been, and the Department of Agriculture wouldn't budge. So they decided to try something else. A 1969 amendment to Maine's Constitution strengthened the power of home rule in cities and towns. And so the nation's first local food sovereignty ordinance was drafted at the Rettbergs' kitchen table. When it was adopted in 2011, there was just one problem. It didn't keep local farmers from being penalized for violating state law. The bill, just signed by Governor Paul LePage, does.
You know, we'll see how it works. You know, it's different than anything in the nation. Do I support it? No. But I didn't fight it to the end like I have in the past.
Republican Representative Jeff Timberlake of Turner is the co-owner of one of Maine's biggest apple orchards. He says he's concerned about the scope of the new law, which gives towns oversight of food production, processing, and consumption, among other things.
Most of the small towns in the state of Maine where farmers are do not have health departments where they have health inspectors that go out and inspect your farm. You know, they have building inspectors that go inspect if you put the stairs in right or the roof trusses on right, but they don't have people that do food inspection. And we're talking things that are capable of making people sick.
According to the Centers for Disease Control, 48 million Americans will experience a foodborne illness this year, even with regulations in place. Of those, more than 100,000 will be hospitalized and 3,000 will die. But proponents of the law argue that much of this disease is a direct result of factory farming and food centralization, not food produced on traditional small farms. But John Rebar, who heads Maine Cooperative Extension, cautions that just because something is a traditional practice doesn't necessarily mean it's safer.
Years ago, there was probably much more foodborne illness than there is now because we didn't have the regulatory and the science-based knowledge that we have now. But because food was so decentralized, the incidence of it wasn't as widespread as it possibly could be with a large processor or producer who might produce a tainted product.
In other words, illness tended to run its course locally, whereas today, one listeria outbreak in California can make the whole country sick. Maine's food sovereignty law tries to address this by limiting transactions to local face-to-face sales only. Anyone wanting to ship or distribute products outside the immediate community still needs the blessing of state or federal regulators. But Rebar says it's unrealistic to think that these products won't be shared beyond the borders of the town where they've been produced. And without mandatory state inspections, he says it will be down to each farmer to self-police. Representative Craig Hickman says that's what good farmers do every day.
This isn't really about food safety as much as it has been opposed for that reason.
Hickman is a Democrat from Winthrop who's worked on the issue for years. He says the law is about letting people decide for themselves where they feel comfortable buying their food. In fact, Hickman credits overregulation for getting him fired up about politics in the first place after state inspectors told him he couldn't sell his homemade yogurt at his farm where he also runs a bed and breakfast.
I believed that some of the regulations, the one-size-fits-all regulations that the department wanted for a homestead of my size didn't seem fair to me or to the people in my community who wanted to buy my food. And so I came to the legislature to try to make a change, and 5 years later, it has happened.
Supporters didn't get everything they wanted. The original bill included not just food, but water, which proved to be too controversial and was struck from the final version of the bill. Currently, 20 Maine towns have adopted local food ordinances where wheels of cheese and quarts of milk can be directly purchased from farmers. But with the threat of fines and lawsuits no longer in the background, more towns are expected to join what appears to be a growing food sovereignty movement. It's unclear at the moment what state regulators think about it all. John Bott, a spokesman for the Maine Department of Agriculture, Conservation and Forestry, says the department is still in consultation with state and federal officials to determine the broad legal implications resulting from the bill's passage and how the new law will be implemented going forward. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org, and from Maine Public. That's This Day in Maine, Wednesday, June 28th, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.